Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
When I was with the circus, just like with any job, I had to negotiate for my salary. And you negotiate for a salary based on, well, what other people are making. You have to kind of look around and see what the company is providing in your category of job. You then look at what you bring to the table and you negotiate what you feel is right so that you can live well. Let's fast forward to divorce. In divorce, it's all about money. Even with children, after we get done with the co-parenting schedule, it really is all about money. It is more like a business negotiation, but you have all these feelings and emotions swirling around that you have to deal with as you're dealing with money. And it's really a tough situation to be in, and I really applaud anybody who does it well. It's an art to do it well, and you have to fall down a few times before you get it right. So don't worry. If that's where you're at right now, if you're in the middle of your divorce negotiation, it's okay to feel insecure. It's okay to try and find your center. But I'm going to explain to you what I see as a better way to negotiate. But let's backtrack for a second. Last week, I uploaded an episode on Erica Jane. That's her stage name. Erica Girardi is her legal name. And Erica Girardi is married to Tom Girardi. Tom Girardi is a personal injury attorney. His law firm, well, was Girardi Keese. They were closed by the courts. Huge bankruptcy case going on, malfeasance of money, allegedly, but assets are frozen and assets are being sold. Erica married Tom in 2000. He was 33 years older than her. She was in her early 20s at the time. Tom was in his third marriage. This was Erica's second. This is all kind of important just leading up to this. So Tom was well off. Erica was a cocktail waitress at Chasen's, famous Hollywood restaurant, no longer exists in Beverly Hills. So they met there. Tom went there. He was very powerful. He's the attorney referenced in the Aaron Brockovich movie. They married. Tom had money. He always made money. Erica didn't make that much money. She always provided for herself, but she certainly didn't make the kind of money that Tom made. You may be finding yourself in a situation right now where you don't make as much money as your spouse makes. Maybe you do have a job. Maybe it's part-time. Maybe it's full-time. But regardless, you don't make as much money as your soon-to-be ex-spouse. So I was doing an episode last week on the financial aspects of all the bankruptcy stuff going down, leading into what would be distributed with a divorce. I interviewed a forensic accountant, Lorna Mouton Riff. I always say her middle name wrong. Lorna Mouton Riff. Sorry, Lorna. On the underlying financial problems between Erica Jane, Erica Girardi, and Tom Girardi. And we discussed the possible malfeasance of money with the law firm, how it affects Erica. And then we're going to do a whole thing at the end of July on the legal aspects of the Girardi divorce. When you live a lifestyle based on your spouse's wealth and less on your own, and you've made wealth a defining aspect of who you are, you're going to run into problems when you're getting divorced. And here's why. Wealth comes and goes. So does this mean that if you've placed your value on the money that is made by your spouse or by both of you collectively, what you can buy, where you can go, what you can wear, Does that mean that your value comes and goes when the money comes and goes? Like with Erica on the Beverly Hills Housewives, she really talked a lot about money. In fact, she talked about money more than any other castmate. Money defined her, her planes, her clothing, how much she spent on personal services to look glamorous. Money truly defined her. And with people who come to my office and other people's offices, money defines them as well. And in Erica's own words on the show this season, she said she walked away from everything. Well, in a bankruptcy, the kind that's going on right now, everything she walked away from is actually being seized by the bankruptcy court. The Lamborghini, the house, other things. It's all being seized by the courts. So once the dust settles on what's left of the possessions that their wealth purchased, the divorce will proceed and divide whatever is left over. You know, then I look at the average person who has money and is going through divorce. Maybe not millions like the Girardis or other famous cases that we've discussed on this show, but mid to high six figures. I mean, that's good wealth to live on. I watch the negotiating techniques spouses use in divorce settlement mediations, especially when they're in this range. And here's what I see. Here's what I learned. We become prisoners or victims of what we want, and if it's material, then we have to justify what we're asking for and why. So let's just talk about the average divorce where one person makes really good six figures, we'll say like mid to high six figures, and the other person makes low six figures or very, very high five figures. Now, there's two different scenarios. One if you have a minor child, one if you don't have a minor child. In the event that you have a minor child, you are really glued to your ex-spouse until that child not only is not a minor, but more than likely is out of college and on their own earning a living. You are glued to one another. So yes, I get that you both have to participate in providing financially for your child. So we'll talk about that in one way. The other situation, of course, is there are no minor children, but there's a real disparity in income. And the lifestyle you've both created cannot be sustained by the one spouse's lower income, even if that income is really high five figures or low six figures. And so the court provides spousal support, or in other states, alimony, or in other states, spousal maintenance. And so what that means is that in order to equalize the standard of living going forward, the court has provided this vehicle called support, maintenance, alimony, that the higher earning spouse will pay to the lower earning spouse so that they can be fairly equal. Okay, so this sounds really wonderful and fair. It does, and I'm not arguing with that. And if both spouses are of the same mind that the higher earning spouse wants that to happen for the lower earning spouse, you're great. You're made in the shade. You have no issues. You're both equal in making those decisions to move forward. But quite often, that's not the case. Unfortunately, the higher earning spouse in so many cases says, just get a job. Just get a job. I supported you as much as I could all these years while we were married, whether it's a short-term marriage or a long-term marriage. I have heard this. And it's especially devastating, of course, when there's a long-term marriage and you hear this coming out of your spouse. It's demoralizing. You feel like you're not worth anything. You don't understand, even though you're getting divorced, why your soon-to-be ex does not want to make sure you're taken care of. And I really, really get that. But here's the other side of this. as unfair as this may feel and seem, and I really get that it does, your power and your control and your freedom is taking as little as you can and walking away and putting your own life together. Your power and control is in saying no thank you. Your freedom, your exoneration of yourself, your uplifting of yourself, your counterbalance to the money that your soon-to-be ex-spouse has is in saying no thank you. I can live on my own. I can do what I need to do to create my own life going forward. Now, that's much easier to say if there are no children. And I get that. When there are children, so let's look at it this way. When there are children, if your greater goal is to be strong, is to be free, is to feel in control of your life, where you are not waiting for that check to come in every month, that transfer of money, that Venmo into your bank account, and holding your breath until it gets there. Your control is in saying, no, thank you. I can stand up on my own. You have just changed everything. Then you can divide all the other assets straight down the middle. Because here's what happens. When you want to negotiate for as much spousal support as you can get, and you're trying to kind of move the other assets around so that you can also get half, maybe even a little more. Sometimes people want more than half, even in a community property state. You are victimizing yourself. Every time you do that, you are victimizing yourself. I know I'm talking to mostly women, but there are situations where the woman is the higher wage earner, and it really isn't any different if the man is the lower wage earner or the man has had a very difficult time keeping work consistent. It really is the same. As soon as we can stand up on our own, as soon as we can say, no, thank you, I understand the law, I understand what I can be entitled to, I understand what I can negotiate for, but I negotiate for my freedom. I negotiate that I am not beholden to you for anything. That's your ideal. Okay, that's your ideal. Now, in order to get to your ideal, you may have to do a step-up plan. You may have to say, I honestly don't want to take anything from you ever. But unfortunately, there's this interim period in which I need to use the law available to me in order to position myself to take control as soon as possible. Now, listen to how that went. I need to use the law. Now, you're looking at the third party. You're not coming from a victim's point of view. The victim's point of view is, I was married to you all these years. I did X, Y, and Z for you. I did everything I possibly could. I put you through school. I allowed you to be the high-earning person that you are. All of this may be true, which means you were very powerful at one time. Look what you did. You enabled your spouse to be the successful person that they are. So why can't you do it for yourself? Think about that. Why can't you do it for yourself? You can. Because you can. Okay, so using the third person outlet, the law. I need to use the law. This is what you're going to do in a divorce settlement if you want to gain control as soon as possible. I need to use the law in order to create a situation for myself in which I actually can springboard and be on my own and in control of my own life as soon as possible. So what I'm asking for is X, and I'm asking for X for this amount of time. And then that's it. I am obligated to be on my own within this amount of time. Now you've done two things. You've availed yourself of the law. You've availed yourself for the option of not worrying, of not being homeless, which is, of course, everybody's fear that they'll be homeless. I've actually had that fear every now and then myself throughout my life. I don't know anybody. Well, that's not true. I do know people that never feared being homeless, but I know a lot of people who have feared being homeless. Even though there's really nice pup tents, we do see them lining our streets now. Nobody in their right mind wants to live in one, of course. But nobody in their right mind who really wants freedom and really wants to understand how to always be in control of their lives wants to take money from somebody. You know, you can't punish somebody for hurting you by taking their money. They're not going to care. They're not going to care. If your spouse has had other affairs, has some mental health issues, is a high conflict personality, honest to God, they're not going to care that you have less than them. They just aren't. So do not look to them for that. It's not going to happen. It's not reality. The opportunity you are given in divorce, and yes, divorce does provide an opportunity for you. Believe it or not, it's one of those life challenges that we certainly don't want to happen. We would love to be in a wonderful marriage forever and have money and live well. I mean, who wouldn't, right? Eric and Jane loved it, but doesn't happen to everybody. So we have to use divorce like we use every single life challenge. We have to use it to grow. We have to use it to be as strong as we can possibly be. And with that, if we can keep earning a great living, this is good. This is really good in the ways that we want to express ourselves. So everybody thinks that winning in a divorce settlement is getting everything you've asked for. You feel in control of the other person, and you relish in that feeling of power and control. Truly you do. You walk away from each mediation session, or unfortunately each hearing, if you get what you want, whatever you're asking for, oh my God, this is great. I'm getting what I want. Obviously I'm right. So you feel like you have power and control until the divorce is over, and the other person doesn't want to give what they said they were going to give or what the judge told them to give. And here's where the power struggle begins again, the real power struggle. So lest you think that just because something is in a settlement agreement or a minute order issued by the court or a ruling, guess again, I am in complete shock that people disregard judges' rulings and disregard the agreement they made in mediation and in the settlement agreement. So let's just say you've never gone to court, you've gone through mediation, the settlement agreement is written, it's filed, the judge signs it, you sign it. Okay, now we have law, we have Bible, we have law. If I had a dime for everybody who called and said, he or she just isn't paying me. He or she said they would. They're not dividing the pension. They're not paying me. They're late. I would be a wealthy person. I am in shock at how people do not obey the court law, the court rulings, or what they signed off on. They just don't. Winning is letting go of someone else providing for you. Winning is letting go of someone else providing for you. Winning is the freedom we have in providing for ourselves as soon as possible. So I have to say that, because in a long-term marriage, if one spouse, typically the wife, has not worked for years, didn't have to, plenty of money to go around, and now you're divorcing your long-term spouse and are in shock that they don't want to spend money until you remarry or one of you dies on spousal support. Shocked. I guess I would be too. I guess I would, seriously. I thought I knew them better. How can they not want to make sure I'm okay? Unfortunately, that is the situation in so many cases. If you really want to win in life, you have to be independent. If you really want to win in a divorce, you have to get up on your own financial feet as soon as possible. Make the best settlement deal you can. If there's a ton of assets, of course you're going to walk away with more than likely half of everything that's community property or up for distribution. Depends on what kind of state you live in. It's that spousal support. It's that child support. Let's go to the kids. That's where this is at. People who want more child support than the calculator states, people who want more spousal support than the calculator states, people who want that standard of living not to change, guess again, it changes. Unless we're talking about $25 million, $10 million that you split down the middle. Unless that's the case and everybody's ready to split it down the middle, nobody's arguing about whose money is whose, winning is saying thank you, but no thank you. So what do you do with the kids? All right, so you can be much more flexible if there are no children. So what if there's children? It's the same issue with child support. You're waiting for that check every single month. What if you're the one that has, what if you're the one that's the lower wage earner and you're the one that has the children most of the time or a little more than half of the time? Well, you're going to buy more food. You're going to have a place to live in that accommodates everybody. You're the one that's going to be taking them shopping for clothing more than likely. Unless you have an arrangement where you trade off shopping trips. You divide everything straight down the middle. You know, you could both do that. That's an easier road to go down, is splitting everything down the middle, than taking child support payments. But listen, I do understand that if you're the lower earning spouse and you're really earning low, like under $2,000 a month, and you're under the poverty line, yes, you can go out and get another job. If your child is a teenager, you can go out and get another job. You have to get another job. You just have to. You can't live on under $2,000 a month, really, and want to make that up in child support and spousal support. Does it really feel good to do that? It may seem fair. It may seem, hey, Judy, this is what the law says, and I'm going to do it. The law is there for a reason. Yes, it is. Yes, it is, and I'm not arguing over the law. I'm really not. And when I do mediations, I do not try and get people to do anything that they don't want to do. I am there to support the way both people want to make their decisions. That is my job as a mediator. But I have more freedom on these podcasts to really show you a better way of negotiating if you're up for it, if you can handle it, if you agree. I mean, all these things have to be in place. I can show you how to have more freedom and how to get beyond that immediate fix that child and spousal support provide to you. Get beyond it as soon as you can. Because being on your own financially, not needing anything from anybody financially, is really where you want to be. That's really when you're not a victim of wealth, when you're not a prisoner of control, forget about how you used to live in terms of maybe not experiencing some of the activities that you used to share with your friends. You know, divorce changes us financially, and your friends will honestly understand. Those people who are truly your friends, you know, maybe not shopping at Prada, maybe shopping at Nordstrom, if you love shopping, maybe that's where you have to go. So who cares? There's nice things at Nordstrom's just like there's nice things at Prada. Who cares? You cannot define yourself by wealth. You define yourself by your ability to deal with life as it happens. That's how you define yourself. And you will get the respect of your real friends and family and your children if that's where your priority is. So the idea of winning in divorce settlements has to change. Winning is not beating the other person out of what they are offering or what they would like to see. That's not what winning is. Winning isn't gloating over what your spouse has to pay you monthly. Trust me, that will change if your ex changes his or her mind once the divorce is final. Winning is being able to say, I appreciate what you're offering, but I don't want anything from you. That's total freedom. Winning is freedom from needing anything from someone else. But I do understand this has to come in doses and steps. When one spouse has to find employment equal to their financial needs. I do understand this practical aspect. I really do. And if you have minor children, you're both responsible for the financial support of them. So yes, the law provides for child support, but the best child support is emotional and an equal participation financially. The best child support is when both parents can be kind to their children, can show each other respect, when each parent can be supportive of the other parent, even in a divorce, and can make sure the kids appreciate both parents. I know that if you're dealing with a high conflict person, you have to take a lot of crap. When you're dealing with a high conflict person, you have to learn how to blow that off. You have to learn how to find your own freedom in how you communicate with that high conflict spouse and how you deal with that high conflict spouse financially. But your kids, again, aren't going to be minors forever. They are going to be supporting themselves. So you do have to put everything into context when you're negotiating and understand that if you can bite the bullet and just let some things blow over. You can't get blood from a stone. If you're dealing with somebody who commits financial infidelity, you know, there are people that are so leveraged into debt that they can't pay support or they won't be able to eat. They won't be able to pay their own rent. They won't be able to have a car and put gas in the car. There are those people. If you're married to that person or now divorced from that person and that person just cannot meet their financial obligations, yes, you can go to child support services. Yes, eventually their driver's license can be taken away, at least in the state of California. And eventually they go to jail. Yes, that can all happen. But what is your life like while that's all happening? What hell are you in because you are expecting something of that person that they cannot provide? They just can't do it. Use divorce as an opportunity to grow as fast as you can. Because I am telling you, your children will be victims of this. Your children, you will be so frustrated dealing with the ex that can't meet their financial obligations for your children, forget about spousal support. They can't even do it for child support. And by the way, child support trumps spousal support. If there's anything that's going to be dealt with, it's going to be child support first, because the kids can't support themselves. And so therefore, both parents have to do that. But I am telling you, the freedom that you will feel, the control that you will feel that you are in, if you just say, I am going to make it on my own. I am going to do everything for myself that I can as soon as possible. And again, I understand you may not be able to do it immediately, but try and make it as soon as possible, because you will then no longer be a prisoner of money, and you will be no longer a prisoner of your spouse, and you will use your own ability to control your life, your decisions, your finances, beyond what you thought. If that is your goal, you will be free. You will no longer be a prisoner of wealth. I hope this has helped any of you going through divorce negotiations and mediation right now. I really hope this has, because this is so incredibly tough. Our hopes are dashed when we get divorced, especially, you know, it's in a short-term divorce, it's really crushing because you didn't even get a chance for the marriage to get off the ground. Or in a long-term divorce, when you thought this would be it and we would be holding each other's hands until we die. That book ended. That's where your dreams are crushed. Regardless, life is going to throw us challenges that we never expected. We can always meet those challenges if we go to where our control center is. And our control center is us. It's not the court. It's not the law. It's not in our other spouse. Our control center is us and how we bounce back. So I leave you with that today. I want anybody to email me who would like to contribute to this conversation. Let me hear back from you, your success stories when you've done this, or if you completely disagree with me, I'm fine with that. Let's make this an open dialogue episode. Thank you all for joining us yet again on the Amicable Divorce Expert podcast. Please share this with your friends. We talk about so many important things, all to learn and grow together. So I look forward to our next episode. And as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.